Heart of the Matter is brought to you by Dundalk Christian Counselling Centre. This free counselling service is situated at Dundalk Baptist Centre on RT Terrace. You can contact us in complete confidence on 932 7094 or email us at christiancounselling@aircom.net. You can also visit our website at dundalkbaptistchurch.org/counselling.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Heart of the Matter on Dundalk FM, your community, your radio. And we have a full studio here this evening. You know, I'm back in my old seat.
Yeah, we've switched now.
Yeah, because you put me in the hot seat for 3 weeks at this stage?
Just about.
Yeah, and you grilled me as well. So we have Michael in studio as well. So Michael, why don't you introduce our guest?
Yeah, we are very excited to have with us, actually, Doug has been with us a couple times, but he's in studio. Doug, thanks for being here.
Yeah, you bet.
Hopefully you're not tired from all the traveling and your mind is working. I know Kevin's probably going to throw some crazy things at you.
So. Yeah, so the deal is, if I can't answer questions because I've been up for 48 hours, and you can just answer your own questions.
Well, we are going to start with a piece of music, and this one is from Chris Tomlin. It's called Your Grace Is Enough.
Your faithfulness, oh God. You wrestle with the sinner's heart. You lead us by still waters and to mercy. And nothing can keep us apart.
Remember your children, remember your friends.
pastor from Colorado and an author of several books. He's actually been on the program two times before, talking about his book on Galatians and as well his book on Giants. And before we actually talk to Doug here, I just want to let everybody know that the church, Dundalk Baptist Church, is having a, what do we call this, Kevin? In Carlingford at the Heritage Center, where Doug is actually going to be speaking on Giants. He's going to be talking about his book, Giants, the Sons of God, and looking at giants in the Bible, giants in Ireland, and relating it to the biblical story. So that's going to be on Friday at 7 o'clock at the Carlingford Heritage Center. And you guys who are listening are more than welcome to join us there. Doug, you're actually working on a new book right now. And what is that book called?
Yeah, I'm working on a book with another pastor in Pennsylvania, and it's a book on the angel of the Lord. We don't have a title for it yet.
Okay, so can you give us just an idea of what do you mean by angel of the Lord?
The angel of the Lord, in our opinion, is the major figure of the entire Old Testament. Most people don't really understand that, so that's one of the reasons we're writing the book. And to just make it as simple as I can, the angel of the Lord is... Jesus Christ before he came to earth in the flesh. So that presupposes that he's God and that he existed before time. And so he was able to come in the Old Testament.
Hmm. So how do you go, if I can maybe direct it toward, I guess, from the New Testament backwards, how do you go from that when you look at the New Testament and none of the writers seem to draw the connection? How do you get that connection going back?
Well, one of the main things we're trying to do. They actually do draw the connection. Okay. One of the things you have to understand is that the angel of the Lord is, that's just a title for a character, okay? And he goes by all sorts of other titles. And so I actually have another book on Christ in the Old Testament that kind of fleshes some of these out. And a lot of them are just one word words. So like the word name, the word, the word glory, like those three are good examples of words that are associated with the angel of the Lord very directly. Okay. So, John 1:1, the way that John begins his gospel is with this Greek word called the logos. And the logos is there with God and the logos is God. And then he talks about how the logos was there in the Old Testament and his people didn't receive him. And then he kind of uses the word name there, and he uses the word glory there, and then he goes back to logos, and he says, now the logos has become flesh, and the word logos is the word for word in English. So all three of those are actually the prologue of John, and they're all titles that are given to the angel of the Lord.
Hmm. So it's not a direct, I guess, citation of saying angel of the Lord, but other words that are associated with this, with the pre-incarnate Christ.
Yeah, exactly. And another one of them is the word God. There's kind of two really important Old Testament texts, if you want me to go to those.
Yeah.
So one of them is in the story of Joseph and Jacob. Jacob's blessing his sons. And this is in Genesis 48, verses 15 and 16. And it's a poetic parallel, the way that he does this. And it says, and he blessed Joseph and said, the God before whom my fathers Abraham, Isaac, and walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless these boys. So the parallelism in the singular form there is the God and the angel has to refer to the same being.
Hmm.
The other one would be in, this one will kind of show you some of the other words that are being used. This is in Exodus 23, and it starts in verse 20. And this is Yahweh saying, behold, I send an angel before you to guard you on the way and to bring you to the place that I have prepared. Pay careful attention to him and obey his voice. And then listen to this language. Do not rebel against him, for he will not pardon your transgressions. So that's actually an idea that's directly applied to Jesus in the New Testament. Who can forgive sins but God alone? And here you have another being that can forgive sins, and he's called the angel of the Lord. And it's because throughout the Gospels, they're drawing these connections. And then the last part of that verse is, for my name is in him. And that's one of the places where we can get a lot of these, where the name idea is associated directly with the angel.
Hmm. So what is the significance? Maybe is not the right word, but the significance of seeing the two individuals here. If you've got God and God back in Genesis 48, an angel, why the difference, do you think? Why didn't he just say God, God, God? Why is he including angel in there?
I think it's because we think of angel in a way that is different than the ancients would have. So the word angel really is just a word that refers to a function. So an angel is just a messenger. But we tend to think of it as a category of being, and so we think of God as another category of being, so you have two categories of beings, and that's not necessarily how the Jews would have thought about it. So he's delivering a message. That would be the purpose in changing the word there.
Okay, so it's highlighting a different function?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk more with Doug about the angel of the Lord, but we're going to go to our next song here, which is A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, and this is by Matt Boswell.
Fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing. Our helper, he amidst the flood of mortal ills prevailing. For still our ancient foe does seek to work us woe. His craft and power are great, and armed with cruel hate. On earth is not his equal. Did we in our own strength confide, our striving would be losing. Were not the right man forever.
So, Doug, let me backtrack a bit and go to Genesis 48, because that is such an interesting verse. We were just saying while the song was playing that you can read a text so many times and then somebody will read it with particular emphasis. And you're like, that never dawned on me when it should have. But verse 16 says, "Now the angel who has redeemed me from all evil." So it sounds like this angel, God, had appeared at some time before this. So is there a time prior to this that you see the angel of the Lord come? Or can you give us some of the instances where we see the angel of the Lord actually appearing in the Old Testament text particularly?
So did Jacob, probably the first instance that comes to my mind, it may not be the first instance that it is, but it's when he has that dream of a ladder, which isn't really a ladder at all. It's actually a ziggurat. So a ziggurat's like a man-made created cosmic mountain or, pyramid.
And so the Tower of Babel was supposed to be that.
Exactly what it is. And actually, I think the angel's in that story too, just kind of based on the parallelism in the book of Genesis. Mm-hmm. But so the Lord is standing on top of that when he sees the dream. And then a little bit later in the story of Jacob, he starts wrestling with this man. And you go to the book of Hosea, and it tells you directly that he wrestled with the angel. So, it's using the angel language in Hosea that Genesis doesn't use, but that's because Hosea knows that these words are interchangeable. So you can just keep on going back. The first time the title angel of the Lord appears is with, of all people, Hagar, the maid servant of Abraham. Mm-hmm. And he appears to her. And what's so important about that story to me is that she just calls him Yahweh. So it's, angel of the Lord, angel of Yahweh, just is shortened to Yahweh. So when you start reading the angel of the Lord, direct, explicit passages, like then, I think the next time he comes in is maybe Genesis 21, 22. I know he's there with the Isaac story where Abraham is going to sacrifice his son, and the angel of the Lord calls out, and then it just shortens it again to Yahweh. So if that's the case, and he's the major way that God is coming to the people in the Old Testament, then you just read back and you start seeing that who's walking in the garden with Adam and Eve. So plenty of church fathers that I could give you quotes for say it's the angel of the Lord. Huh. Who's talking to Noah? It's the angel of the Lord, because that's just the consistent pattern that it's building for you.
Right. That's actually what I was going to ask. Is it thinking back to Genesis 3, Genesis 2 and 3, is it then any time that we see God speaking? Is that what we're meant to kind of assume, I guess?
So I don't know that it's any time. Like we're reading this passage in Exodus 23, and it's really weird. So the Old Testament uses really sometimes confusing language because it uses the angel in the third person. It says my angel, he's going to come and he's going to deliver you. So don't. And then third person, don't rebel against him. So who's speaking there? Well, I tend to think that it's the Father speaking, but it could be the angel speaking on behalf of the Father for the angel, which would kind of be a weird thing. But Jesus seems to do that kind of same stuff where he's like, the Father has sent me to do this. And, then he kind of is almost talking like if you ever watch Seinfeld, the Jimmy episode, where he's always talking about himself in the third person.
That's right. So he would be talking on behalf of the Father, really just about himself.
Right. But in that case, certainly you see two Yahwehs in that, because one is the Lord speaking about the angel who is called the Lord.
So. Okay. So how does this fit in then with Jewish understanding? If, did they have a category for a dual Yahweh, or, how does that fit in with its idea of monotheism?
Yeah, they actually completely had a theology of it. At least some of them did. So there's been scholarship, kind of the primary work. The foundational work of this in modern times was a guy named Alan Segal. He wrote a book called Two Powers in Heaven. This was a guy, he's dead now, but he was a Jew, and I think he might have been an atheist. So he didn't have like a stake in the game. And he writes this book on how there was a, what he would call a heretical sect within Judaism that believed that there was something called two powers in heaven, where they were, one wasn't good and one wasn't bad. They were both good, and they were both called Yahweh. And so, and he actually argues that because Jesus came and claimed to be basically Yahweh, that the rabbis made it a heresy officially when they destroyed the temple, when the Romans came in and destroyed it, and so that they wouldn't keep converting to Christianity.
That's interesting.
Doug, there's a lot of instance in the Old Testament of the angel of the Lord And, you know, there is the distinction between angels and the angel of the Lord, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely.
First and foremost.
Yep.
But then there are some strange kind of ones that are disputed. There are ones that are, you know, clear that people who experience the incarnation are saying, you know, this is the angel of the Lord. Like in Samson's parents,
right.
Manoah. And,
right.
And a couple of others, Gideon, just before Gideon's raised up as a judge.
Yep.
But the one that kind of gets disputed a bit is Joshua, the army of the
commander of the armies of the Lord. Yeah,
the commander of the armies of the Lord. And is would you say that is the angel of the Lord there as well?
I would, and I think that we actually have really good ground to stand on. And I use that ground language kind of as a tongue in cheek, but so it talks about how he's to take off his sandals because the place you're standing on is holy ground.
Yeah.
Well, that's language that's been used before, mm-hmm. and it was used in Exodus 3 when Moses yes. is there at the burning bush, and he's to do the exact same thing. That's the only two times I know of that language is used. Mm. But if you go to Genesis 3:2, guess what it says? And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of the bush. People don't.
Yeah.
Really, you know, when they go to the Genesis 3 story, maybe it's because of the Ten Commandments, Charlton Heston movie. You know, we just, we're prone to thinking in the way that the movies tell us to instead of what the text says. Mm. But it's very obvious. It's the angel who's talking to Moses, telling yeah. him that. And so here's the parallel with Joshua.
Yeah, because it's Moses is drawn to it by the fact that the bush is burning, but it's not consumed.
Exactly.
But when he gets there, he hears the voice of the angel of the Lord. Is what you're saying.
Yep.
So it's not just a burning bush he's seeing.
Right. He's seeing there's some figure in the bush. So I would actually argue that the burning, the fire yes. there is probably an image of the Holy Spirit surrounding the angel.
Yeah.
And that goes through, you could do a whole another show on that.
Huh. Yeah, we'll come back and maybe we can talk a little bit about that some more. We are speaking with Doug Van Dorn. He's a pastor from Colorado, an author of several books, including Giants, the Sons of God. And he's going to be speaking in Carlingford at the Carlingford Heritage Center this Friday at 7 o'clock. If you'd like to hear him talk about giants from Ireland and giants in the Bible. But we're going to have more with him right after our ad break. So stay tuned for that. And if you'd like to make a comment, Kevin has the Facebook page open and you can text him your question there. And we can see what Doug thinks of that, but we'll be right back after this.
Dundalk Baptist Church meets at the Baptist Center on RD Terrace. On Sunday morning, we get together at 11 a.m. for our main worship service.
On Sunday evening, we meet at 6 p.m. for Bible study.
We'd love to see you there.
And we would love to see you at Dundalk Baptist Church on RD Terrace. Now we have, Doug is going to be preaching for us this Sunday at 11 a.m. So you can come along to hear that. And also, as Michael said, we have the special meeting in Carlingford Heritage Centre. It's the Old Church of Ireland church there in the middle of the town. So Doug's going to be speaking on giants and other things from the Bible. And then we have our evening study as well at 6 o'clock in the Baptist Centre. But, of course, we do have people listening in online. Now, unfortunately, I'm going to have to do this from memory because we have so many people listening in, but we have been frozen out of the map that we usually use to see where people are listening in. So it's over to you guys. If you are listening in, do let me know. Send me a message and tell me where you're listening from. So we have Phil who's listening up in Washington State. We have Adriana who's listening in California. We have people listening in Michigan, in Maine, in Mississippi, in North Carolina, and in other places in the US. We also have people listening to us in Brazil, in North Africa, in India. Aldred is listening to us in India. We have folk listening to us in China, in Australia, in the Russian Federation, in the Ukraine, in Romania, in Denmark, in the Netherlands, in France. And we also have our loyal listeners listening to us in the UK. We have Marinus who's listening to us in North Yorkshire. We have Matthew who's listening to us all the way up there in Inverness in Scotland. Imperator and Pauline are listening to us in the West Midlands of England. And then we have Martin and Roisin and Evie who's listening to us in the West Midlands as well. We have folk listening to us in the Greater Belfast area, in Tampa Patrick and Lisburn and Enniskillen, in Sligo, in Galway, in Limerick, in Cork, in Leash, in Wicklow. In Dublin, we have Francesca's listening to us in Balbriggan. And then we have folk listening to us around the town on Dundalk FM 97.7. So we do hope that you're enjoying the show. Do message us if you have a question for Doug. If we can't get to it on this show, we'll definitely get to it on the next show, because Doug is back, Lord willing, next week. So we're going to work him hard this time when he's here and take advantage of his time here. So do text in your messages to the Facebook page, or even to our text note number is +353 87 09 09 791, and we'll hopefully get to your questions at some stage.
Doug, so I think you've made it pretty clear that you see the uses of the angel of the Lord in the Old Testament as basically a pre-incarnate Christ.
Right.
So what do you do, or how do you see Matthew 1, where Christ is actually being born and we have this angel of the Lord who is appearing to them and telling them? Is that, do we see the same thing, or is this something different?
No, I think that that's a different angel. That's just a messenger angel. It could be somebody like Gabriel, a created being. And I wouldn't worry too much about the definite article in that instance. And I just don't know how to make sense of it if it's the angel of the Lord declaring kind of his own coming in the flesh. You know, I suppose it's possible, but
yeah.
So let me take from there and go back to Genesis 2 and 3. What's the difference, or is there a difference between saying, okay, the angel of the Lord is a pre-incarnate Christ, as opposed to just a physical manifestation of Yahweh himself? Can you even talk like that? To say this is Yahweh come down to earth to interact, rather than here is a pre-incarnate Christ.
Well, I don't know. That sounds to me like an either-or fallacy. Like, if he's called Yahweh, in just shorthand Yahweh, then he is Yahweh come to us. But he's also the angel of the Lord and the second person of the Trinity. Mm. So I don't see why that would be a mutually exclusive thing.
Okay. When you said I can't remember his name now, Alan Siegel, I think you said his name was. So he was talking about heretical Jewish sects who had that idea of two powers.
Right.
So how do you go about doing research, looking at the Jewish understanding of these two Yahwehs? And maybe there's more than this. When he's from that, you know, going towards, well, this is a heretical sect who believed that. So was it orthodox not to say that there were two Yahwehs?
Okay, so yeah, that's it became heretical later. So the idea is that during the New Testament, when John was being written, even as late as John, even take a late date, and certainly at the time that Jesus was walking the earth, that it wasn't a heresy. It might have been an undercurrent. It might not have been the mainstream, but it wasn't a heresy. And that's why they could write to it. They could appeal to it. Jesus could appeal to God. You know, the apostles can appeal to it. And there's no problem. And in fact, Jews all over the place start converting to Christ because they actually had a category in their head that wasn't strict Unitarianism. Because if you're a strict Unitarian and some guy comes along and says he's God, there's no way that you can even comprehend that. I mean, that's why Jews have such a hard problem converting today, because they don't have that category. Mm-hmm. But if they have what he calls a binitarianism, and that's basically the word that the scholarship has used since him, if they have some kind of a binitarian or even Trinitarian conception, even if they're not using the language, then somebody comes along and claims it and then proves it satisfactorily to them, then there's no logical reason why they couldn't believe it.
So there are writings then of early Jews who talk about this too.
What they do is they call them dangerous texts. So you and I were talking about one earlier in Genesis 19. It's Genesis 19:24. It's the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, and it says that Yahweh rains down fire from heaven. Oh, so Yahweh rains down fire from Yahweh in heaven. And so there's one Yahweh on earth. He's the guy that's been talking to Abraham in the whole chapter before that, arguing with him, having his feet washed by him, eating a meal with him, talking about Sarah laughing about it, about the prophecy of the birth. And then there's the Yahweh in heaven. And so the rabbis are like, what's going on? And even church fathers. In fact, that text is one of the most used two powers text in the church fathers that there is. Justin uses it, Irenaeus uses it, Clement, they're all using this passage because there's two Yahwehs, and you know, in a Christian worldview that just makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so did they take that from the Jews then, or
all right. Yeah. And there's others like Daniel 7, there's the Ancient of Days, and there's one riding the clouds coming to him, and he looks like the Son of Man. So Jesus takes that exact phrase and says, that's me, basically. Well, the Jews were talking about this being a dangerous two powers text because what do you do with it? This seems like there's two gods here, but we only believe in one God. So Christianity came along and gave the explanation that made sense.
And it's because of that. It's because of Christianity then that it becomes heretical.
Right. Because all these, I mean, just think about the political situation. They've lost their temple. Okay. So they're being scattered around the world now and they're having to write down their traditions and they're losing their culture. And all these Jews are converting to Christianity. And it's starting more and more to be seen as this is not a good relationship between the two. Mm. So, you know, politically, it kind of makes some sense to say, we got to do something about this.
Yeah. Doug, one of the things that strikes me is people listening might be wondering, well, why does it matter what the angel of the Lord means in the Old Testament? Why we're now living in a New Testament era? What does it matter?
Oh, there's so many answers to that question for me. It's one of the most important questions for me.
Yeah. Right.
You know, here's one off the top of my head. People separate the God of the Old Testament from the God of the New Testament so often.
Yeah.
The God of the New Testament is this loving, happy, joyful. He just wants you to get along. And the God of the Old Testament is mean, terrible, evil, horrible deity. And, you know, you can't have the two together. Well, if the angel of the Lord is Jesus, and Jesus is the angel of the Lord, and he's the same yesterday, today, and forever, then you have to find a way of making those two things work together. You can't split them apart because it's the same person.
Yeah. And in Revelation, there's a lot of imagery of judgment, and the one who is doing the judgment is Jesus. He's the judge.
And
King
in fact,
Kings, Lord,
in at least a couple places, he's actually seems to be given the angel language.
Yeah.
Revelation 10 is an example.
You know what I mean? So, so when you see Revelation and you see him, his return, his triumphant return in judgment of sin and death and all of those things, if you read that back into the Old Testament to see the judgment of and going back to the text of Joshua, where Joshua is being used by God to bring judgment on the Canaanites, and the angel of the Lord is the one there that's giving him the, you know, Joshua asking, are you for us or against us? And therefore, it seems to be judgmental language that the angel of the Lord uses there to give Joshua the impetus to go and carry out what God has called him to do.
Mm-hmm.
One person said that the only person that we will see in heaven is the Lord Jesus Christ. And therefore that, you know, when we get to heaven, it won't be that we will see God, but we'll see Jesus Christ as the incarnation of God, because we won't be able to see God because God is spirit. Would you agree with that?
That's a tough one. I know what they're getting at.
Yeah.
I think I agree with the idea of it. Jesus is the mediator between us and the Father.
Yeah.
And I think that's the idea. So, you know, are we going to be able to see the Ancient of Days like Daniel did?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But and I think, though, the other thing we talked earlier about the burning bush and the fire surrounding the angel of the Lord, is that a manifestation of his holiness?
Yeah. His holiness, his justice, his purity.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that popped in my mind as you were talking there is that Jesus, if he's the angel in judgment, like here's a verse from Isaiah 30, verse 27. Behold, the name of the Lord comes from afar, burning with his anger in thick rising smoke. His lips are full of fury. His tongue's like a devouring fire.
Mm.
That's talking about the name. So if talk about angel there judging. But in Isaiah, just a few chapters later, all of a sudden, this person becomes the suffering servant.
Yeah.
And so he's found a way to take the sin that we deserve and put it upon himself. And that's what the incarnation's all about.
Yeah, and that's what's so important, isn't it? That we don't just see Christ as this judgmental figure, both in Old and New Testament, but also because the people of the Lord are a redeemed people. And they are being redeemed the same way as everyone has always been redeemed, through the suffering servant, the Lord Jesus Christ, who is the incarnation.
And justice has not been destroyed because of what Jesus did. It's actually been fulfilled and honored because of what he did.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're going to go to our third song, and we'll come back and finish up our conversation with Doug. But our third song is by Casting Crowns called Who Am I?
Who am I that the Lord of all the earth would care to know my name, would care to feel my hurt? Who am I that the bright and morning star would choose to light the way for my ever-wandering heart? Not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who you are. I am a flower quickly fading, here today and gone tomorrow, a wave tossed in the ocean. Vapor in the wind, still you hear me when I'm calling. Lord, you catch me when I'm falling. Because of what you've done, not because of what I've done, but because of who you are. I am a flower quickly fading, here today and gone tomorrow, a wave tossed in the ocean, a vapor and you catch me when I'm falling. You told me who I am. I am yours. I am yours. I am yours. Thank you.
Doug, you know, we were just talking about Abraham seeing a pre-incarnate Christ there in Genesis 18. And when you read that chapter and you see Abraham's reaction, you kind of feel like he knows this is not just a man. There's something different about this individual. And he goes running to him. And he, you know, they have basically a party for him. So it seems like people recognize, first of all, even in Joshua, this is more than just a man. But what about angels in particular? So do people recognize the angels, and especially in Genesis 19, when Lot sees them, he goes running to them as well. I mean, there's a parallel there with what Abraham did to them. So does he recognize them as angels, and do the people of Sodom recognize them as angels?
So I think there's a couple ways to answer that, Michael. One is that it's possible, at least with the Abraham, the other guys that doesn't work, but Abraham has seen him before, so he knew who he was. Mm. So I think that's probably the simplest answer to that. And from there, it kind of can get pretty weird. So it depends on what is being meant by an angel. So we talked earlier about how an angel is a function, but it also is a title for a heavenly being, like kind of became a catch-all. So there's different kinds of angels, if it's being used that way. Some of them are described as very ordinary, human-looking. And so, like, in the book of Hebrews, it talks about you might entertain strangers unawares and talk about angels because they look like us. But so I've thought about this question quite a bit, and there's some pretty weird stuff that I came across in Jewish literature, like in the Dead Sea Scrolls that were found in 1948 in the desert in Israel, kind of the oldest stuff that we have. And they describe a group of beings called watchers. Watchers are sons of God in Genesis 6. And watchers are called angels. Okay, so, but they're described very differently than ordinary. So they're described as like really super tall and like these white beings and as almost having kind of serpentine-like appearance. It's really strange, like spooky. And then in one case, Satan is described that way. So my point is, if they're just angels as looking like men, then how would they know? If they're something higher, a higher kind of created order that came down here for a special mission, then it's possible that they didn't look like quite like people think that they did.
So in your opinion, do you think the men of Sodom knew they were angels, or do you think they just thought, hey, these are travelers who've come in?
So I think that the Sodom story is a parallel to the Genesis 6 story. I agree with you on that. We were talking about that earlier, too. And the Genesis 6 story is the sons of God, which would be the watchers. And so if that's true, then you probably have three watchers that are coming. And in that story, then they would have recognized that there's something different about these guys.
What about, I've thought about this. I don't know how I would even articulate this, but you've got the story of Elisha, right, and his servant, and he's really scared, and he prays that he would open his eyes and to see the army that's there, and all of a sudden, angels are there. Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of people think, well, God, heaven, that's somewhere way, 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 way out in outer space. But it seems like, and you can correct me if you think differently, that almost that the sphere of God is not way, way out there where angels are, but it's almost, if I can use the term, a fourth dimension here where the veil is just lifted and all of a sudden you can see there's more going on than we can actually see.
Right. I agree with that. I think that heaven is the new heavens and new earth. That's the way it's described. It's not just heaven. So it's the new heavens and new earth, and they seem to interact, especially kind of at the end. But if what Elisha is seeing and the guy who sees that army is seeing is true, then it has to be that they're here right now. We just can't see them unless they want to be seen or somehow they're allowed to be seen.
There just has to be that veil just pulled back.
The veil has to be pulled back.
Yeah.
The veil is very thin in these places. Like, people know about this kind of stuff who aren't Christians. So.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, believe it or not, that was this is the end of our show, and that was a very quick show, too.
Yeah, it went very fast, as usual on the show, Michael. We end with a piece of music, and this one is called Send a Light by the Dominion Jazz Players. Another jazz song.
I don't know why I've been ending with jazz the past couple of weeks, but I want to thank Doug for being on the show. I appreciate you coming in.
And that's great to see your studio and see where you guys do all this craziness.
Yeah, and we want to encourage you to tune in next Monday as well, where Doug will be back, and he'll be talking about Giants. And you know, it's kind of become almost a tradition now. This is the third year in a row where you have been on the show in October.
No, seriously.
Yep. So we're making this a tradition here.
Yeah, it's the way Doug the subjects that Doug touches on, though, around that time, everybody's done.
Everybody wants to listen to it.
It's a good timing. So as we close our show this evening, it just remains for me to say good night and God bless. Coming up next, we have Shades of Green with Jimmy Neary, and later on, we have the repeat of Town Talk from this morning, where we close with Dominion Jazz Players and Send a Light. Thank you.